This is Event AV and Lighting Demystified, and I'm your host, Anka Trifan. Welcome to our new episode, and thank you for joining me today. It's been a month since we talked last. I know, I'm in the middle of my busiest work season of the year. Anyway, I want to come to you today to have a conversation about best practices for sound, video, graphic, and lighting for events, because rarely would you plan an event these days that doesn't require the use of some form of audiovisual and lighting. I won't dive too deep into sound this time because I already did that during my last episode, but I will spend some extra time towards the end on lighting and how used strategically it influences how we think and feel. So stay tuned for some amazing insight and understanding on how we innately respond to lighting cues and how specific colors can create very specific and immediate human responses. I chose to focus on lighting this episode to balance out our last episode's topic, sound, which you're more than welcome to listen to if you haven't done it already. And while you do that, please remember to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcast. Leave a great review, hit the 5 stars. It really helps this girl out and makes this podcast visible for other people and event planners like yourself. To find more information about Trifan Events, our services, our event work, what our fans have to say about us, we would love for you to join us at trifanevents.com, and that is TrefanEvents.com. You can also find us on Instagram and Twitter at Trifan_events or on Facebook and Pinterest at Trifan Events, one word. Before we dive into best practices, a little bit about myself. I have a feeling some of you skipped the introduction episode, and that's okay. I totally forgive you. So, who am I? I am a certified meeting professional that specializes in a very specific and unique niche of the event industry. I'm what I like to call myself, a technical event planner for the event planner. During my work hours, when I'm not plotting my next podcast episode, I support the corporate, nonprofit, for-profit, special event planner and manager and their events by leveraging audiovisual, lighting, projection, and other technology to create memorable experiences. I have 15 plus years of experience in the event industry, behind the scenes in many roles, from planner and manager to hands-on roles such as sound engineer, video producer, lighting designer, and AV tech. I've intentionally put myself in all these roles so I can fully understand what it really takes to plan, manage, and execute an event from beginning to the end, as well as know for myself what does it look like to be in these roles and have a comprehensive understanding of all facets of event planning and event productions. As the host and producer of Event AV and Lighting Demystified, my goal is to focus on tangible, technical, and planning advice for anyone in the event industry. While this is the busiest time of the year for me, I will probably record one episode a month, beginning of each month, just so you guys know when to expect it. And in order to get all of it straight to your phone, I would love for you guys to subscribe to this podcast. Today, I come before you with a wealth of professional experience and knowledge representing my professional brand, Trifan Events. No matter how many hours of planning, designing, and producing you put into an event, the reality is if you don't surround yourself with amazing partners and professional teams of experts to support all that hard work with high-end equipment packages and solutions, all the planning would hardly get executed into memorable experiences. My ideal vendor partner is a team of professionals that brings many years of sound sound, lighting, and audiovisual experience to the table. Someone that is known for their professionalism and full-service approach, but also for their reasonable pricing. I believe in relationships and in working with people who are easy to do business with, and most importantly, who are a trusted partner to have around. Trifun Events is my personal brand and the prototype for what I like to call a technical event planner for the event planner, and it specializes in budgeting and cost control, contract negotiation, event design, event logistics, strategic event production planning, audiovisual and lighting production implementation, on-site, off-site production management, and vendor supplier management. When we talk about sound, and when it comes to great sound for meetings and events, there's so much to be talked about, from the microphone at a podium or in front of me right now, to the loudspeaker used, to the location of those loudspeakers, to the room configuration and materials it was built from, to the soundboard in use and the tech behind it. I mean, it's an entire world of interconnected details that makes that overall experience a great or not so great one. Because dissecting what makes great sound great would take an entire day, or also for the benefit of not repeating myself, I would suggest that you listen to the Makings of Good Sound episode, because I'm only going to touch on just a few things this time around. When it comes to sound and loudspeakers, there are as many loudspeakers out there as venues. I hear all the time from my clients, how do I know how many loudspeakers or what kind of loudspeakers I need for my event? To answer this, I like to make an unusual analogy. If you love crafting, plan events, or have kids, or all the above, you probably already have so many pairs of scissors laying around the house. Training scissors that don't have real blades, craft scissors that cut pretty designs, fabric scissors that cut cloth smoothly, kid scissors, utility scissors, kitchen scissors, hair cutting scissors. Who would have thought there would be so many uses for one basic object, right? When it comes to loudspeakers and the many types you find in venues around town, you discover that each loudspeaker has similar attributes and functions, but each loudspeaker's purpose is unique to a specific task. If I use craft scissors to cut my kid's hair, it would look pretty ridiculous. If I use training scissors to cut the fat off tonight's chicken, it would certainly be a struggle. Each pair is specifically purposed, and if used outside of that, they're not nearly as effective. So when you're in a ballroom and the venue manager says you'll be fine with using the in-house sound system for your fundraising gala, you'd be using a tool made for a different task. If this was a cocktail party, a sales, or a board meeting, you'll probably be fine. Hearing someone speaking at an event is more important than seeing them, and I touched on this during my last episode. Think about it for a moment. If you're sitting in the audience at a sales meeting and there's a problem with the slides, it may not be ideal, but the speaker can still deliver his presentation and hopefully carry their point across. If you're at a fundraising event and the benefit auctioneer can't be heard, not only would that be very frustrating, but they literally can't do their job effectively, and you just lost possibly thousands of dollars in donations. When we talk about sound, having the loudspeakers dispersed in the room in strategic locations, calibrated and tuned properly to control wall reflections is primordial to the making of great sound. The reflection of sound from walls and other surfaces can be measured in time elapsed between the end of the original sound source and the reintroduction of its signal reflecting back into a room. The gap between these two sound signals will define echo versus reverberation. If this gap is greater than 0.1 seconds, the reflection is called echo. If this gap is less than 0.1 seconds, the reflection is called reverberation. Our human ear cannot discern between sound signals of less than 0.1 seconds. Therefore, we hear echo as two distinct sound signals and reverberation as one prolonged sound. A quick rule of thumb for determining how many loudspeakers you need for your upcoming meeting or event is a minimum of 2 loudspeakers per 75 to 100 guests. Each one of those loudspeakers should be able to provide 500 to 1000 watts of power. Why is power important? Because it determines the task for which that speaker was made, as in the scissor analogy, and as Barry explained in my third podcast episode. Little is more grating than a message garbled by a deficient sound system. If you've ever planned or attended a fundraising event, you've probably already asked yourself what makes for a great fundraising event. Obviously, there are a lot of details that go into that. But when it comes to the technical details, good sound in conjunction with a great benefit auctioneer is the foundation of a great fundraising event. Successful fundraising is greatly influenced by the quality, distribution, and volume of sound. Hiring a professional company to provide a balanced auction sound system with loudspeakers evenly spaced throughout the space not only enhances the sound, the audience's comprehension, and overall fundraising revenue, but also maximizes your crowd's enjoyment of your event. If the sound is garbled, not clear, distorted, or not acute properly, bidders won't bid, is as simple as that. The benefit of having an audio professional that is able and capable to set up the sound system well and calibrate it properly will only maximize intelligibility, fine-tune the listening environment for your audience, resulting in a clearer and better sound. And trust me, the job doesn't stop there for this audio professional. A good audio technician will make adjustments on the mixing board to even out any variations between your presenters' volume levels and EQ their voice to deliver a more uniform level of sound from presenter to presenter. Now, these adjustments can be done sometimes the easy way or the hard way. The hard way is on the fly with no advance warning. And let me tell you, nobody likes that. Someone gets to the podium and speaks with a booming voice, and it will take the audio professional a few seconds to adjust their settings. Those few seconds, however, will most likely sound jarring to the audience while the tech figures out how to catch up to each speaker's unique voice. The easy way is to get the presenters or speakers to do a quick sound check prior to the program. That way, the audio technician can preset the calibration for each individual presenter, have the EQ all dialed in, ensuring that the audience experiences a smooth level of sound throughout the program. It only takes a few minutes to do this and can make a huge difference in the sound quality for your event. One tip to get presenters to participate in sound checks is to make sure you don't call them rehearsals. Because many professional speakers don't feel they need a rehearsal because they've done this so many times. However, few will refuse a sound check when its technical importance is explained to them. While hearing is more important than seeing, as mentioned earlier, we can move on without touching on visuals and viewing mediums for a minute, because the likelihood of dealing with some type of visual medium is very high in today's event landscape. When it comes to visuals, the viewing medium can typically be some type of a screen. It can involve technologies like LED walls, monitors, blended screens, projection onto walls and buildings. Because projection screens, unless they're built in, take a good footprint in a meeting space, it can be very helpful to create a floor plan detailing any obstructions, desired sightlines, and footprint the projection and screen takes in a room. Conducting a site visit to truly evaluate the venue's space is necessary to create this diagram and understand the venue's offerings, the physical specifications of that space, especially if this is a new space you haven't worked in before or the layout of the meeting has changed. Note exact room dimensions, not just room capacities. Note any changes in height or soffits and verify the height for each. I would strongly encourage you to invite an AV professional to attend the site visit, which is a free service we provide to all our clients. So they can provide input in regards to how much space screens require, especially in regards to rear projection or long throw front projection. We've recently worked on an event out of town, which made it kind of hard to schedule a site visit. And while venue measurements were shared and a layout diagram created, when the event day came and the setup started for that event, it was very clear that the size of the screens chosen was not going to physically make it into the room, even as the room measurements implied that it would. What the measurements didn't portray was that there were many beams in that space, which had a large impact on the height of the room when it came to large projection screens. In this example, using multiple smaller screens would have allowed for better visibility since the larger screens could not be raised to the appropriate height. Mirrors, columns, windows, and other architectural features can impact screen and projection choices. Mirrors can cause unwanted reflections. Columns can interfere with audiences' ability to see presenters and screens. And windows will impact the type of projectors you'll be needing. When it comes to large screens and projection, the screen should be at least 5 feet off the floor. The distance from the projector to the screen should be at least 1.5 times the width of the screen. We have a nifty little formula which takes into account the width of the screen and the length of the projector in order to determine the distance from the projector to the screen, which is quite important for rear projection applications and long throw projection applications. One factor that might drive screen placement is how the audience is seated. We have a guiding rule that we call the 2-4-8 rule to determine seating related to screen placement. The first row of seating should be no closer than twice the height of the screen. The back row of the audience should be no more than 8 times the height of the screen. Say you have a couple of 7x12 feet screens at the front of the room. Your front row seating should be no closer than 14 feet from the screen, while the back row seating should be no more than 56 feet from the screen. Naturally, in a real-life example, there are many exceptions, but following these guidelines will give you a great starting point. When it comes to graphics, one of the most common questions we get asked a lot is, what's the best resolution for PowerPoint presentations? It would be best to know your output display device up front. It's better to start a presentation in a given resolution or size before you add shapes and images and slides, so you don't ruin your slide design afterwards by changing the resolution midway through your PowerPoint creation. You can run your slideshow on a computer screen, a TV, or a projector. It is not that important to know what type of device you will be using, but you must know the output display resolution. A common output size for this is 1920 by 1080 pixels. By default, the size of a new presentation in PowerPoint is currently a widescreen type presentation, 13.33 inch by 7.5 inch, I believe. Mostly, you will have 96 dots per inch, which is DPI, on your screen settings. So this means that a default PowerPoint presentation has a resolution of 1280 by 720 pixels. HD TVs are capable of displaying 1920 by 1080 and higher, and you see how already there is a problem with default PowerPoint presentations. Default PowerPoint presentations are not in HD. They are lower quality, and this is not really ideal when using PowerPoint for digital signage. When you have pictures and videos in your slides, or when you want to have high quality output where every pixel is worth the effort, then it is needed that you set the slide dimensions correct for the highest quality. In order to do that, in your PowerPoint presentation, you click Design in the normal PowerPoint menu and then click the Slide Size button. When the button opens, you have three options: Standard 4x3, Widescreen 16x9 or 16x10, and Custom Slide Size. For the Custom Slide Size, you need to click the third option and to create a slide or slideshow with the dimensions of, for example, 1920 by 1080 pixels. Then just enter 1920px at the width and then 1080px at the height field. This will be translated automatically into inches or centimeters depending on how your PowerPoint is set up. Click OK to close, and all slides of your current presentation will use this new size. One good question someone had was about setting up slides for a MacBook Pro Retina display, which has higher resolutions. To set up that presentation for your MacBook, find out what the recommended resolution is. Maybe it's 2560 by 1080 or 2880 by 1800. I don't know, I don't have a Mac. When you have that, go to your PowerPoint, click Design, and then Slide Size, and choose Custom Slide Size. There you see the width and height in inches, and just enter 2880px and 1800px, and PowerPoint converts it automatically into the corresponding inches or centimeters, as mentioned before, if that's how it's set up for you. This way, when your slides get projected, they will look great and you will be proud of your work. Okay, now on to one of my most favorite topics to touch on today, and that is the importance of lighting at events and how lighting used intentionally, it can create a very specific mood in the space. We all know that what we eat greatly influences how we think and feel. Well, same goes for our physical environment. Estimates indicate that motivation, meaningfulness, and memory account for approximately 75% of learning, while the remaining 25% is dependent on the effects of the physical environment. An ideal meeting environment uses natural light. However, that's not always possible in an event setting. In nature, lighting and color provides deep cues for our natural rhythms. Understanding how we innately respond to these cues can guide our lighting design to achieve very specific intentional results because color creates specific immediate human responses. I am a sound engineer, but I have always loved the power of color, so much so that I went back to school to study lighting design. Color has the power to create interest, to change mood and emotion, to calm and energize, to refine and define and impact. Color affects every element of design, from brand development through all aspects of marketing, culminating to live experiences. There's an excellent chapter on how color impacts all our emotions and all the research that's been done around color in this book called The Intentional Event Design by Tahira Endin, which is an excellent resource for anyone interested to dive deeper into this topic. For the purpose of keeping this short, I will only be looking at a small slice of how you can use color in designing event experiences for your audience. Creating an intentional color palette for your brand and your event takes a keen eye. Simply put, six colors form the basis of every other color. Black and white are technically the absence or absorption of color, and all the other colors are made from a combination of this. Primary colors, blue, red, and yellow, and these three colors are the basis for every other color. Secondary colors are made by combining the three primary colors. Red and yellow makes orange, warm. Yellow and blue makes green, cool. Blue and red makes violet or purple, cool. There are many shades, hues, and tints within these ranges made by adding black or white to a color and a thousand different names to use to describe these colors. Is it orange or amber? Is it purple or violet or fuchsia? And so on. More importantly for our events is an understanding of how color impacts emotion. Our immediate response to an environment happens deep into our brain, and it happens immediately. It goes deeper than our conscious, I like that color over the other color, and provides us a lever of control over the experience. Color use well allows us to shift perceptions and inspire conversations, reflection, and a sense of value in our events. By the way, did you know that the 2019 Pantone Color of the Year is Living Coral, which is an animating and life-affirming hue with a golden undertone that energizes and enlivens with a softer edge? Cool colors like blue, purple, and green tend to create a sense of calm and trust. Blue suggests trust and reliability. It creates a sense of cool and can increase communication, which can lead to creative solutions, excellent for small group work. Green is the predominant color in nature, and it reflects freshness, increases feelings of comfort and potential for growth. However, as a lighting element, it must be used sparingly because it can make the skin look less ideal. Purple is a color associated with regal events, those with a sense of dignity. It is the most spiritual color and inspires higher thinking, a feeling of calm, and it's excellent for encouraging reflection and perfect for reflection zones. Warmer colors, red, orange, and yellow, tend to create a literal sense of warmth and enhance a positive mood. Red, for example, denotes passion for a cause or a brand. It also means danger and can add an edge of naughtiness or excitement to an event. Used well, it increases energy and passion and can be used when you want a group to focus warm feelings for an idea or a cause. Orange has a deep warmth and vibrancy and brings a sense of playfulness. It incites feelings of change and movement, and it can be used to encourage expressiveness when you introduce a new idea or seek a creative solution. Yellow can signify hope, optimism, and energy, and can be excellent for entrance and opening elements. It's also a sign of caution, think amber lights and traffic lights. Shades of lighter version of any of the above colors create a sense of softness and security. White offers a sense of purity and is used by many brands as a core element of their brand design. Black gives a sense of mystery and sophistication, and black tie events will remain a staple for this reason. Metallics bring a sense of prestige and elegance to an event, but they also go in and out of style. We can easily add color to any event through lighting, to cue audiences as mentioned above, and you can influence learning and conversations by altering the lighting in a room. While color is not just a fun element to have at your events, but as we just learned, it creates specific immediate responses, we do need to be aware of cultural significance of certain colors. For example, in some culture, white signifies death and would probably be inappropriate or even offensive to include at your event. Make sure you do some research, especially if cultural references are relevant to your event or a primary culture will be represented. Lighting is one of the easiest ways to control and change an environment. Building it into your overall event design is a critical function. Since lighting can have such a profound impact on the way people feel in a room, working with a lighting professional is a really good investment for elaborate events. A lighting designer should not be just a luxury, but built in as a core team member on your planning team. They have a deep understanding of lighting, its effects, technical possibilities, and requirements. While there is a cost for this expertise, it is often offset by simple, good technical planning, as lighting designers understand the objectives of the event and build lighting specifications to support these objectives. And I'm not even touching on rigging plots and power requirements, especially if you work in a larger venue. It is not always about more lighting, but about making the best decisions within your budget. One last tip, when you do venue and site walkthroughs, make sure to ask questions about the built-in lighting provided by the venue your event will take place in. and make sure your technical event team has control over the lighting in the ballroom or the meeting room you're using. Because so many venues have such a wide variety of lighting built in, from halogen to fluorescent to LED lights, some individually controlled, others in bands, and some on dimmers, you don't want to be in a situation where it takes forever for a bank of lights to turn off. Or once, for example, during an event, we waited almost 6 minutes for the halogen lights to get from off to full on. Nobody's got time for that. Anyway, this is all I had for you today, guys. Thank you everyone for your attention. I hope you were able to retain some nuggets of information from this episode. You can always go back and listen to any part of it. If you have any questions, please feel free to email them at podcast@trifunevents.com and I'll make sure to get back to you with the best response I've got. Okay, friends, this is it. Thank you so much for listening to the very end. If you like what you heard, please show us some love by subscribing to this podcast on iTunes, Google Podcasts, or whichever platform you use to listen to. Also, by leaving a great review and hitting the 5 stars, you make this podcast visible to other listeners with the same interest as you. Don't forget to follow our Instagram account at trifun_events for event and podcast updates, tips, and tricks of the trade. A huge thank you to Zeke Trifun, the original soundtrack composer of today's episode. If you need help with original music work, you can find Zeke on Instagram at @thetrifun, or you can leave me a comment and I will make an introduction. Have a fantastic rest of your day, rest of the month. Until next time.